Operator. Operator, will you please give me the correct time?
Certainly, sir. It's Joan Davis time.
Sure. It's Joan Davis time.
Well, there's no question about it. From coast to coast, it's Joan Davis time.
It's Joan Davis time.
And during the time you spend with Joan Davis tonight, you'll hear the voice of her special guest, one of the most popular private eyes in the public ear, Sam Spade. Plus a great supporting cast featuring Hans Conried, Mary Jane Croft, the music of John Rarick's orchestra, the Choral Air Singing Quintet, and yours sincerely, Ben Gage.
I'm a cob in a cotton corabelle, got a four-leaf clover stuck in my lapel, with a horseshoe in my pocket, and a rabbit's foot as well. I'm a cob in a cotton corabelle, gotta keep up my courage, Corabelle, or speak up to your pappy for a spell. Gonna mention my intention of a honeymoon hotel. I'm a comin' a courtin' Corabelle. So giddy-up, giddy-up, Sylvester, don't you dare to stop, 'cause underneath this double-breaster beat the heart that's about to pop. I'm a cravin', caressin' Corabelle. I'm a countin' on some kissin' in the dell. Let it thunder, let it lightning, let the rain come down pell-mell. I'm a comin' a courtin' Corabelle.
Now it's time to meet the star of our show, America's Queen of Comedy, Joan Davis.
Thank you, thank you, and hi, everybody.
Hi, Joanie. Well, friends, today's... Friends, today, still frantically searching for a new career, our ambitious gal, Joan Davis, has decided to become a successful authoress. While applauding her decision, we must warn Joni that most successful writers are thoroughly acquainted with the works of other great authors like Socrates, Aristotle, Dickens, and Thackeray. Yes, Joan, before you start writing, you must have a complete knowledge of the true literary classics.
Well, gee, I know a lot about the literary classics. For instance, I once read that famous book called... I studied that well-known essay by... And I also know the immortal story of... believe me, I haven't missed Dick Tracy in 5 years. And, of course, before I actually start writing, I must admit there is something, though, that does discourage me a little. Most critics agree that the best romantic novels are about something that stems from the author's own life. And nothing romantic ever stems from my life. You know why? My stems. It all started when the Civic Culture Club held their luncheon in my tea room to honor the famous woman writer, Pamela Whiteside. Just before she left, I said to her, "Gosh, Miss Whiteside, I'm certainly proud that you came to speak in my tea room."
"Thank you, my dear, but frankly, I'm a little tired. I attended a tea on Sunday, another tea Monday, two more teas on Tuesday, and then this tea today."
"Gee, I'll bet your pinky is pooped." But it must be wonderful being a famous authoress and talking to other famous authors and authoresses.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's stimulating, my dear. Absolutely stimulating. I remember my first meeting with Ernest Hemingway. It was at the Savoy in London. We had dinner, and then a very heated discussion took place that lasted for hours. Mr. Hemingway finally won the argument.
Stuck you with a check, huh?
Of course not. Mr. Hemingway is a perfect gentleman. We each paid our own check.
Gee, I wish I knew a perfect gentleman like that. And I wish I could also travel to far-off places like London. Then maybe I could meet somebody and, well, you know what I mean.
Yes, I do, certainly, my dear. And I'm sure the men in London would appreciate you more than the men here do.
Do you really think so?
Yes, it's quite foggy in London, you know. Oh, I do love England. As a matter of fact, most of my books were written and published in England.
Oh, did you make much money writing in England?
My dear, I'm simply loaded with pounds.
I know, but did you make much money? thinking of taking up writing as a career, and, well, I figured you could give me some good advice.
Oh, I'm sure I can. To be a good writer, you must travel and experience things at first hand. Now, if I were going to write a book called Inside Africa, I would go and study Africa. If I wrote Inside Siberia, I would go and study Siberia. Well, isn't there some place that you've traveled that you could write about?
Yeah, but would anybody be interested in reading a book called Inside a Greyhound?
No, I'm afraid not. Well, I must be going now. Good luck, my dear, and may all your troubles be literary ones. I just made a little joke.
A very little one.
You know, sometimes my sense of humor just gets away from me.
I can't say that I blame it.
Okay, Mr.
She'll want more money, please. Well, after I met Pamela Whiteside, I was more determined than ever to be a famous writer, so I decided to get to work immediately. I got out my typewriter and put in some paper. And the first day, I wrote like mad all day and got a lot done. That was the first day. Second day, I had to start all over because there was no ribbon in the typewriter the first day. And the third day, I finished it. My beautiful romantic novel. I knew it was a great book. After all, didn't it take 3 whole days to write? So I sent it to a publishing company, Schmidt, Lamp & Schuster. As a matter of fact, in 10 minutes from now, I have a personal appointment with Rodney Schmidt Lamp, the head of the firm, to discuss the book. Gee, I hope you'll think it's as great as nobody thinks he'll think it is. Well, did you read my novel, Mr. Schmidlap?
Quite, Miss Davis. I read the entire manuscript from cover to cover.
Well, what was your reaction?
I was deathly sick for 2 days. They had to give me injections of Shakespeare to bring me round.
Well, how would you compare my book with other pieces of modern literature? Where would you rate it?
About 2 points below Orphan Annie.
It's pretty low, ain't it?
And if you think this book is publishable, you're quite balmy, old fig.
Rush, didn't you like the plot?
Plot? I've read more interesting plots in telephone books.
Naturally, they have more characters to work with. Maybe I can rewrite my book, or that joke. What exactly didn't you like about my book, huh?
Well, the plot is weak, the characters are unbelievable, the writing is childish, there's no action, the climax falls flat, the finish is stupid, and the idea has been done 1,000 times.
I know, but outside of there.
Look here, Miss Davis. Your novel is supposed to be a story of romance. As I read it, you should have been able to transmit to me the romance of moonlight in the garden, the scent of roses, the thrill of warm lips pressing against yours, the ecstasy of being crushed in your lover's arms. Well,
never mind the book. Let's wrestle.
Hey, what?
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Schmidlap. I lost my head.
A decided advantage in your case. Miss Davis, let me read you just one pathetic passage from your literary monstrosity. Here's what you wrote in a so-called story of modern times. Listen. And then our hero, Johnny, snatched Gwendolyn up in his arms and rode off into the night with her on his white horse. Now, who is going to believe that today?
Have you priced used cars lately? Mr. Schmidlap, why don't you give me a break and publish my book, huh?
Miss Davis, our company is only interested in writers who might be able to make the book of the month.
I could do that.
I said book of the month, not schnook of the month. Miss Davis, aside from not knowing how to write a good book, I'll wager you never even read a good book.
Oh, is that so? Look, Schmitty, old boy. It so happens that I know the complete story of every bestseller that's been written in the last 10 years, so ha ha ha.
Indeed. Well, then tell me, what was the story of Gone with the Wind?
Well, it seems this fella met this girl, and...
Mm-hmm. What was the Cass Timberlane about?
Well, it seems this fella met this girl, and...
What was the story of the lost weekend?
Well, it seems this fella met this bottle, and they've been steady for about... Huh?
Goodbye, Miss Davis. And before you go, why don't you admit you know absolutely nothing about bestsellers?
Yeah, well, anyway, I do know that Forever Amber wasn't a story about a traffic light that got stuck.
Though Joni's novel of romance just didn't make the grade, we're sure she won't admit defeat. She'll ride on, undismayed. We know your pulse will quicken as the plot begins to thicken when she tries to write a mystery for that private eye, Sam Spade. But in the meantime, lend an ear to this. Worry, 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 love is passing me by. Worry, 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 I'm so painfully shy.
Other guys get all the kisses.
Why am I the one who misses?
Worry, 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 woe is me. Baby, 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 I'm a fool about love. Maybe, maybe I should go to school about love.
When it comes to getting chummy,
I'll admit that I'm a dummy.
Oh, worry, 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 woe is me.
I found out that I'm the worrying kind. I go worrying right along. Worry, 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 should I hold her so tight? Worry, 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 am I kissing her right?
She said, Joe, it's you I'll marry.
I'm not Joe, my name is Harry.
Worry, 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 woe is me.
Well, friends, when Joni's decision to become a writer of romantic novels received harsh criticism, did she give up writing? No. She merely switched her field of creative endeavor to writing for radio. And at the moment, we find Joan about to start writing on her favorite subject, mysteries.
Sounds like he blew a tube. Gee, I don't know where to start. Say, maybe I ought to write a script for a regular mystery show that's already on the air. Yeah, that's it. A show like Sam Spade, maybe. He always starts out sitting in his office, and then a gorgeous woman walks in with a problem. What should I call the woman? I know. I'll call her Joan Davis. That name, she's bound to have a problem. Well, here goes. Page one. Let's see now. As tonight's story opens, we find Sam Spade, Private Eye...
Hello, I'm Sam Spade, Private Eye. Well, today started out quite normally for me. On the way to my office, I was shot at three times, knocked unconscious twice, and shanghaied to Singapore once. Before I went back to my office, 3 months later... Feeling kind of tense, I decided to drop in at Luigi's for a whiskey sour. Luigi makes a whiskey sour that's really different. No whiskey. I was sitting there, sipping my 12th one and feeling quite warm, when suddenly a dame stepped through the swinging doors. Did I say a dame? She was an angel in form-fitting wings. I knew what I felt wasn't from Luigi's cocktails anymore. This was it, the real thing. It was time to put away my Boy Scout knife, my building blocks, and my yo-yo. This was the main event. When she spoke, it was like honey dripping on rose petals.
Are you Sam Spade, Private Eye?
Yes, I'm Sam Spade, Private Eye. What can I do for you, sister?
Well, my name is Joan Davis, and I need your help desperately. I'm a secretary, and my boss has just been murdered. I went to your office, but...
I know. I wasn't in. Right?
Right. But how did you know?
It's my business to know. But if a murder has been committed, why didn't you go to the police, Gorgeous?
I didn't want to bother the Gorgeous police. I'd rather bother you.
She stood there looking at me with her smoky blue eyes. I looked back at her with my smoky gray ones. I couldn't see her very well on account of the smoke. But even in the haze, I knew that she added up to everything I'd ever dreamed about. She was champagne and caviar. She was a fillet of sole with tartar sauce. She was chopped chicken livers covered with schmaltz. Suddenly, I took her into my arms and drew her to me hungrily. She spoke in a low, throaty voice.
I wanted you to do that, Sammy boy.
I pressed my lips hard against hers. What a kiss. When I let go of her, her smoky blue eyes were still looking into my smoky gray eyes, but now they were in the wrong heads. Then I remembered that this was business. Okay, sister, I said. Tell me about this boss of yours that was murdered.
Paul Cartwright? Oh, he was tall, handsome, and sophisticated. And rather cute, too. He had dimples in his cheeks that were so deep they met. In fact, he had to be on a liquid diet. Couldn't get solid food past his dimples. Oh, I still can't believe he's dead. I still can't believe it.
She sobbed softly. Then she lowered her long eyelashes. They reached almost to her knees. She was obviously under a great strain. I wasn't sure yet whether the strain was due to her boss's death or her long eyelashes. Suddenly, her hand reached for one of the little tassels that hung alongside her head, and she raised her eyelashes again. Every wolf in Luigi's was obviously about to howl at her, so I said, look, baby, go to your apartment. I'll join up and quiz you there later.
All right, but don't be long, Sammy boy.
Okay, and when I get there, I'll expect you to have some coffee in.
I'd rather wear a house coat if it's all the same to you.
I didn't get to her apartment as soon as I expected. When I got outside, something hit me. The stars fell down. Everything went as black as the ace of spades. And when I woke up, I was in Singapore again. 2 months later, I knocked at her door.
Why, Sammy, I didn't expect you so soon.
It was past midnight, and she apparently was caught unawares. Her hair was done up in curlers, and there was cold cream on her face. She had also taken off her eyelashes for the night, and as I turned on the bright light, she blinked her stumps at me. Well, baby, I said, you've already told me you were a secretary and that your boss was murdered. Now, how was he killed?
He was stabbed with a letter opener. I was alone with him. Yes, I was alone with him when this man came in from the fire escape, picked up this letter opener, and killed this boss of mine. Then he ran down this fire escape again. If I'd call the police, they'd say I did it. That's why I came to see you.
Mm-hmm. This man you say did it, can you describe him?
Oh, perfectly. I know just what he looks like. He was exactly 5'8". Or was it 8'5"? Anyway, he had black hair and wore a green hat. Or was it a yellow hat and a red toupee? I'd recognize him in a minute.
Can you think of anyone who'd want to see your boss dead?
I didn't hear you, Private.
I say, can you think of anyone who'd want to see your boss dead?
Oh, I can't think of anyone who wouldn't. No. But the day before the murder, he got a threatening letter that read, "The end is near. You will die suddenly, violently, and horribly."
How was it signed?
Very sincerely yours.
There was something about this girl that kept me off balance. I had a feeling there was more to her than met my private eye. So I arranged to meet her at her boss's office the next day to examine the corpse and maybe find something less disturbing to work on. The next morning, as we entered the elevator in her building, I intercepted a peculiar look that passed between her and the elevator operator. Laboratory analysis later proved it to be harmless. The concern she worked for as secretary turned out to be quite an outfit. As we entered the office, a guy right out of a cheap edition of Dickens excitedly rose from a high stool and said,
"Miss Davis, I am so glad you have came. The boss looks so strange, and he don't answer when I speak to him."
"Mr. Schultz, the boss is dead."
"Himmel, and I've been sitting for days waiting for him to make the first move in our regular chess game."
"Schultz, I'm Spade, private eye on the case for Miss Davis. What's your racket?"
"I is the bookkeeper here."
"Yeah, you a good bookkeeper?"
"Is I got my at business college. I was at the head of my class in advanced embezzlement."
"Well, if you're so good, I'd like you to tell me what shape this business was in. It might give me a lead."
"Oh, the business is in fine shape. Worth $15 million. And by the way, congratulations, Miss Davis. Now that the boss is dead, you control the stock."
"Yes. The money is mine. Mine. It's mine."
"Don't forget, half of it's mine, Liebchen."
"Quiet, you flat-headed fool."
My trained detective instinct told me that this didn't sound quite kosher. But I wasn't sure, so I asked to see the corpse. With hips swaying like a sail in a spanking breeze, she led me into the inner office. There, stretched out on the floor with a letter opener on his back, was the corpse. She pointed to the dead guy and said,
"Spade, I want you to meet my boss, Paul Cartwright."
"You don't look like he wants to meet anybody."
"Well, it's not his fault. He's had a bad day."
I decided it was time to stop playing around. I'd found out what I needed to know. I let her have it all at once. "All right, sister, you may as well confess."
"Confess? You think I killed him? But it's not true. I have no reason."
"No? Then how about this letter I found in the corpse's pocket? It says, 'Dear Miss Davis, last week I thanked you for the interest you've been taking in my business. But this morning I checked the books and I found that with Schultz's help, you two have taken so much interest lately, you now control my entire business. At 5 p.m., I am calling the police.'"
"How do you like that sneak going through the books?"
"He was going to call the police at 5. His smashed wristwatch shows he died at 4:18. I wonder what would have happened if he'd called the police at 4.
He would have died at 3:18.
She was glaring at me. There was cold hatred in her eyes where before there had been warm love. She knew that I knew that she had murdered her boss, but she wasn't sure yet whether I could prove it. Neither was I. Look, sister, I know the motive. All I need to clinch this case is either a confession or some evidence proving that you did it."
"I'll never confess."
"Uh-huh. You stepped right into that one, didn't you? Come on, kid. Confess."
"No, I shan't confess. I shan't, do you hear? I shan't. I shan't. I shan't."
She stood there, shanting at me. It was obvious that she would never talk. Suddenly, her eyes were soft again. I knew what was coming. The big pitch they all give you when the chips are down and the jig is up.
Look, Sammy boy, forget the law. I'll pay off Schultz, and it'll be me and you and the $7.5 million. That's a lot of money, Sammy boy. Think of what we could do with it. Why, with $7.5 million, we could either go away somewhere for the rest of our lives or spend Saturday at Santa Anita." "Oh, what do you say, Sammy boy?"
I wanted to say yes. She was so beautiful, a slice of heaven, a big bundle of dreams, but I knew I couldn't. A private eye has got to have ethics. If I let her off, I could never again peek over a hotel transom without feeling like a sneak. Too late, I heard a footstep behind me, and boom, I was off to slumberland again. When I came to, Schultz was standing over me with a big bottle of smelling salts. He was slugging me with it. Suddenly, the dame snarled at him.
"Stop it, Otto. He can't prove I did it. He's got no evidence."
She was right. All I had was the motive. I took another look at the corpse. Suddenly, I knew that I had her. I spun around to her. "Okay, sister, I got the evidence I need. I can prove that you did it."
"I don't believe it. I don't believe it."
"Okay, I'll tell you how I know. You, like everybody else, are a creature of habit. You've always been a secretary, and you have the habits of a secretary. That's why you stabbed your boss with a letter opener.
Prove it, I dare you. Prove it.
You asked for it, sister. After you stabbed your boss with a letter opener, still the creature of habit, you became panicky, and you did something that revealed the whole case to me.
I did? What did I did? I mean, what did I do?
In your panic, you unconsciously knew that you'd done the wrong thing. So in a weak attempt to cover up your fatal error, you grabbed a rubber stamp and pressed it against your boss's head.
No!
Yes! Look, there it is, stamped on his head. Opened by mistake, returned a dead letter office. I rest my case.
All right, I'll confess. I did it. I did it. I did it. I scared me. Gosh, I finished it. And I just know it's great. I'm going right over to the radio station and sell it to Sam Spade. Well, now that you've read my script, what do you think, Mr. Spade?
Well, first of all, Miss Davis, my name happens to be Duff, Howard Duff. I just play the part of Sam Spade.
Well, anyway, what do you think of it? You going to buy it, Thomas Spade?
Please, the name is Duff. Miss Davis, I'm going to be frank with you. Give up writing for radio. You have no talent for it. Your script is completely wrong.
Gosh, first my novel and now my radio script. I guess I'm just not a writer. Oh, well, goodbye and... thanks a lot, Mr. Spade.
For the last time, Miss Davis, my name is Duff, Howard Duff. Stop calling me Spade, huh?
But you were frank with me. The least I can do is be frank with you.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, of course, all I've been doing is calling a spade a spade.
Who do they say has a way with the ladies? Who do they plan as the man of the day? Who in his wink has the twinkle of Hades? Shawnee-o, 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 Shay. If he grows fonder beyond city limits, then he makes love till you shove him away. If he steals spoons till the moon's getting dim, it's Shawnee-o, 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 Shay. Children ride, dances die, ladies lie, spins aside for Shawnee-o, Shay. And though he's quite a roué, they go for Shawnee-o, Shay. Young and gay, old and gray, they all pray he will stay, he's quite a new man. City, he's the toast of it, he makes the most of it, cause O'Shea likes to play to the grandstand. Better beware, he's as fair as Apollo, looking his way turns a nay to a yay, making each heart comes a barn into follow. Shawnee, oh, Shawnee, oh, Shawnee. O'Shea.
Now, here's Joni again.
Well, before I go, I'd like to say thanks to Howard Duff, alias Sam Spade, for dropping in on us tonight.
It was lots of fun, Joni, even though I hated to criticize your literary efforts.
Oh, that's all right, Howard.
Well, you know, actually, I think your ideas showed real imagination. I think you'd be great writing for the movies.
Well, I did have an idea for a picture once.
Well, really? What was it about?
Well, it was about a boy who runs away from home, goes into vaudeville, and makes a hit singing a mammy song down on one knee. And then he becomes a famous star. I even had a name for him. I was going to call him Asa, or maybe Al.
That sounds a little bit like the Jolson story.
A little? Where do you think I stole it? Oh, well, good night, Sammy boy.
Good night, sweetheart.
And goodbye now.
Came to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.